Carolyn Jasinski. I'm back on home ground. I'm back in Adelaide for a short while anyway, and I've had a chance to catch up with a really good old mate of mine, and it's Rex Ellis. Now, Rex is known as the Camel Man, and he is a true bushy in a great sense. He's just somebody who's been around and is still going around, and will do that for years and years to come. But I'd like to introduce you to Rex, and just to catch up with him on what he's been doing and where he's come from and what he's up to. How are you going, Rex?
Yeah, I'm good, Carol.
That's good. So I met Rex in 2005. We worked out. Now, I'm a bit loath to give away my age, but it's a long while ago. And I was working at the Advertiser at the time, and I was asked to go and do a camel trek. And this just fascinated me. So my first trip with Rex was out in the Mallee country up on the River Murray. Now, I reckon that was 4 days. We did the river and we did the Mallee on one trip. And if you've ever thought of going on a camel trek, you need to go on with somebody who knows what he's talking about. How did you get into camels, Rex?
Oh, well, when people ask that, I always say I had a nightmare, you know. That's how I got into camels. Because I was running trips, you know, I've been running trips for a long time, and what, four-wheel drive trips. And when I was on some of these stations, I was on sheep stations when I left school, and I was up against a couple of deserts. And we'd go out into the deserts on weekends when we weren't doing much, looking for rock holes and things for birds and all that. And I'd see wild camels, you know, feral camels that had been let go after the Afghan mainly and some European cameleers let them go years ago, and they went wild in the desert. And they just seemed to be so, they fitted so well. They're not native animals, obviously, but the fit was really good. And I just could see how that could just value add my sort of safaris that I was doing with four-wheel drive vehicles, safaris in the Australian context.
So you do safaris out into mainly, it starts in SA, doesn't it? Mainly South Australia, but you take bush safaris out all over the country. You've done deserts, and we went through the Flinders later on, but I'll get to that later. But
yeah, deserts and the tropics. I'm South Australian based, and you know, where I live these days, up in the River Murray, up on the edge of the semi-desert, above Gorda's Line, if you know what that means. Only crow eaters know what that means.
Well, it's past that line you can't graze.
Gorda, Charles Gorda, the Surveyor General in South Oz years ago, he was a man ahead of his time, and he rode a horse around the Saltbush Line and realised that farming north of that line was very not a good idea. But a lot of people ignored him in the wet years and paid the penalty when the seasons reverted to their normal situation of dry. And so, yeah, so I live up there, and it's a good place to live in the desert, semi-desert.
It's a beautiful spot. Our camel trek went out into the Mallee, and I've always thought Mallee's a pretty boring kind of countryside. And no offence, Rex.
Yeah, but like most people.
I did the camel trek, and you managed to make going out into the Mallee really interesting. And I think I nicknamed you on that first trip the human GPS. We'd be wandering around the bush, and Rex just knows what direction to go in. It's amazing. I'd be completely lost within half an hour, but you just knew where to go.
But little do you know that I spent half my life lost.
I don't believe that.
Or temporarily disorientated, you can politely call it, perhaps. But, yeah, you know, it's just a sea of Mallee out there, and you know, I always like to think there's nothing between where I live and the Gulf Country apart from Mount Isa, which is true. And so, yeah, I was doing those sort of off-season summer trips out there, three-day trips.
Yeah.
And, old-growth Mallee is like, they don't really know how old it is. These trees can be, they estimate, about 1,500 years old.
So to give everybody an idea, if you're out in the Mallee, it's like you're in the true bush, and it's just scrub around you. and you're surrounded by these trees that are really hard to walk through. So we're on camels on this particular trek. They managed to make getting through it easy, but you're still dodging branches and
duck your block now.
Yeah. So after the Mallee, we went along the Murray, and you're talking to a girl here who is so petrified of snakes. It was my biggest fear, and Rex assured me we'd be fine. Well, we got to the River Murray, and wandering along, and what comes straight underneath me? I remember asking you, what should I do? And you said to me, if you see a snake, you just stay quiet and still. So I saw this 6-foot red-bellied black snake coming out of the river, was just trying to get past me, but I think I spent an entire 30 seconds up in the air screaming. So I did exactly what I shouldn't have done.
Yeah, and there was a fair bit of daylight between you and the ground at the time. Yeah, there was.
So after our Mallee trip, I went home and I said to my husband, we need to toughen up our kids and get them on a camel trek. And he thought it was a great idea. We did 8 days in the Flinders Ranges. Now, this was one of the most amazing trips I've ever done, one of the hardest trips I've ever done, and one of the hardest trips I've ever had to write about, because I loved it. I took Mum came along as well. Now, she was in her 70s at the time.
Mom.
Yeah, she was very fit. And my two kids and my husband, the kids were 14 and 16 at the time, and really, I think they just wanted to... The 16-year-old just wanted to be out partying. The 14-year-old was like a little intern, wasn't he, for you? He was.
Yeah.
You were teaching him how to handle the camels, and that's not an easy thing to handle a camel. But after 8 days in the bush, everyone thinks camels smell, and they do, but after 8 days in the bush, you smell the same, so it didn't really matter.
Well, actually, in the camel's defence, it's only their breath that can smell because of what they eat. They eat a whole lot of different vegetation.
Yeah.
Because they don't really smell because they don't sweat. They only sweat from two glands, and that's only under duress, you know, when they're really working hard.
Yeah.
And it's compared to horses, so they don't smell really at all.
They were amazing.
You're giving them a bad name, Carol.
No. I defy anyone who says they don't like camels. I think they're absolutely beautiful, and they all had their own personalities. They were gorgeous. We had Topshot, who was a young buck, wasn't he? And he was quite upset about not being the lead camel for some of it. And we had the big, beautiful blonde Mishnah. She was gorgeous.
Yeah.
She would drop herself down at lunchtime and would not move until you gave her a cuddle, which put that big buff head on your lap.
Yeah, she's a big smoocher,
Mishnah.
Yeah, so she's much sought after. She's a very hot sheila, that one.
She's. It was a great trip. Now, I know your camel days are done now. You've passed on the reins to another couple up at Blinman, haven't you?
Yeah, Ryan McMillan and Natalie's wife, they used to work for me, and they do a really good job working out of Blinman where I used to work.
So you can still take those?
Yeah, yep, they still do trips in the Flinders Ranges and beyond,
right.
Once a year they go into the desert as well.
Now, you're not doing camels anymore, but you still take out your outback safaris. Now, your latest one's called SOS, and it's not Save Our Souls. It's Special Outback
Selection. Yeah, that's what I call it.
And probably your flagship trip is a 14-day one?
Yeah, vehicle trips. Yeah, I do birdive stuff, like ornithological trips, shorter ones, and a 7-day Flinders Ranges, sort of a generalised trip as well.
I've just been amazed, one, at how you can get around the bush without a compass and without something like a phone like I would have telling me which way to go, and that if any kind of sticky situation comes up, you know how to get out of it. So if you're ever going to be in the bush, you need to be with a bloke like Rex Ellis. Now, I'm fascinated by your trips that you do now. Tell me where you go on your latest ones. It's all in four-wheel drives, isn't it?
No, four-wheel drives and boats.
And boats.
Yeah. You know, for years, I don't like this word retire. To me, it's the poison chalice, you know.
It's a dirty word.
Yeah, I've got a lot of bloke mates who are retired and they're just on the slippery slope down to whatever, wherever they're going. I don't do as much as I used to do, but what I do, apart from what we talked about, is the favourite thing I do and the thing that I'll do until the day I can't do it anymore, follow the floods in the desert rivers to places particularly to Lake Eyre and other places. But
and that's been a highlight this year, hasn't it?
Yeah, I did one trip this year, and it was only a small flood, and it was surreal because we actually caught up with the bloody flood, which
it was the most.
You couldn't script it if you tried.
I remember you calling me, and you were chasing the water. It was actually starting to flow, wasn't it?
Yeah. I lost half my crew because I had to change my departure date four times because the river hadn't arrived. And to get to a river before the water gets there is a bit embarrassing when you're running for a business, you know. So it has happened once, so I didn't want to repeat that. So I got on a day after the flood went through, having lost all these people. So we only had two boats instead of four. So that's eight people total and a Jack Russell dog. My little Jack Russell always comes.
Little Billy, he's beautiful.
Yep, he's a good little bloke. And so, we got going and it was a pretty normal river, you know, on the average. A fair bit of water, but I knew the water was not going to be sustained for very long, you know, because it had come through after a couple of real dry years and took a lot of filling up stuff up the back where I was, you know, up in the Channel Country. And we got going, and on day two, I reckon, towards that afternoon, day three in the morning, about halfway down the lake here, which is about a 130k trip from where I put the boats in off the Burswell track on Cowrie Station, we came along around a little bit of a bend, and suddenly the guts dropped out of the river, and bang, we're on the bottom, and the water's boiling, and it's like rapids, and we're not really designed for rapids, Carol. You know, these bloody ton boats full of everything from Vegemite to bloody everything, and to carry, you know, for people for a 7 day, 8 days, and I'm bang on the bottom, and I'm thinking, you know, didn't have time to think much, but except this is pretty weird, and then we just sat there. Went from 2 meters down to nothing.
With the water gone?
Yeah, water. Like pulling the plug out the bloody bath.
Wow.
Too early, you know? And I looked in front of me, and 200 meters in front of me, there is the head of the river. Just the end of it. Like the end of the river. And I thought, well, I thought a lot of things. I thought, this has never happened before in 30 trips down here.
So you were 200 meters from where you thought the river was going to be. The water just disappeared.
Yeah, it did, because what it does, see, the river was doing about 3 k's an hour and filling up stuff as it goes along.
Right.
Whereas we cruise along about 7 k's an hour, just, you know, on a trip down a river. Well, the river, you generally reckon the water's going to be where it should be.
Yeah.
But Australian rivers are rivers of sand, inland ones, desert ones mostly, and water's a bit of a novelty, let's face it. But when I saw the end of that river, it was just, and I had one of my grandsons with me, he ran down to the end of it, and waded in the end of the river, and just creeping along, you know, just like a snake going along. So we sat there like a mob of bloody refugees sitting there in the boat for, you know, like for a couple of hours, and people were saying, well, what's going to happen now, Rex?
I said, and what did you do?
We just sat there a bit longer. and then gradually we could hear this fresh coming down, you know, and it's a sound like, it's the sounds of silence out there apart from the birds. But then you can gradually hear this sort of, it's like an orchestra sort of starting up in the background, gradually coming towards you, you know. It's this water, and it's a sound you can't really describe. And then gradually the river just bulks up, and you start floating up, and you stick a paddle in, there's a foot of water under you, then 2 foot, then a metre, and away we went again.
Wow. So in which direction did it come? From the 200 metres in front, you could see it coming back, or it just bubbled up from underneath
you? No, it's coming down behind us.
Okay.
You know? Yep. And but filling all this stuff up as it goes.
Oh, so the river caught up with you from behind.
And where we were, it was full of, it was salt water. Suddenly it's salt water. Couldn't even get a drink because it's frothy salt water, because it's going through one of those salt water holes rather than a fresh water hole, which there's a few of them.
What an amazing experience.
And that's stirring up the salt water. And that in turn, it was a feeding frenzy of mountain ducks, like Australian shell ducks, and beautiful red-necked avocets. And they are feeding there because it's turning up all these invertebrates, you know, that live there that these birds feed on. And that was pretty good, you know, as a floor show while we waited, sort of thing. The birds always are.
What an amazing experience.
Yeah, and then so we got going and we caught up with the river two or three more times, but without actually seeing the end of it. And so in the end, this was just definitely a case of the journey being better than the destination, because we never got to the destination because we ran out of time. And I said to the people, well, we can wait another couple of days to get enough water to get to Lake Eyre, because that was where we're heading. It's like the, well, it's like one of those, it's like a Muslim going to Mecca, you know, for Aussies to go to Lake Eyre in a boat.
Yep.
Always reckon. And so they just ran out of time, you know, so we had to do a U-ing and go back. And we only just got back without getting stranded because the guts was falling out of this river. Big time, quick.
So these are not trips to be taken lightly, are they? You need to go with somebody who...
Yeah, well, that's what I reckon. obviously. But, I mean, the thing is, I'm the only one that does this. And, you know, I've sort of taken all the risks years ago. And I know, I mean, I never get any better at doing it than I am now.
There's nothing like being in the bush, is there?
Yeah, ain't nothing like being in the bush.
Yeah. No. Look, I have really fond memories of our camp nights. You know... You're around a campfire and it's just surreal. You've got the camels in the background. I know the camels are no longer part of what you do, but just sitting in the bush, you had a campfire going, you're just getting back to nature. It's just so peaceful, so beautiful. And the stars. Now, you mentioned books before.
Yep.
How many books are you up to now?
I've written 10 books.
10.
I've designed a desert map. Showing the Australian deserts where they are, where they literally are, like the periphery of them, because I've been around most of these areas, and where I haven't been, I've talked to pastoralists to fill them in.
Yep.
And they've got a description of these deserts, you know, and so, yeah, 10 books.
10 books. What was your latest?
Latest one's called Dromedary Dreaming, which is about, predominantly about my paddle wheel of the dromedary. And a bit of other stuff thrown in as
yeah.
well.
So Rex's books are it's like talking to Rex when you read the books. He has the best anecdotes, the craziest characters. He knows some of the most amazing people all around Australia and throughout the bush in particular. Thank you, Rex. Lovely talking to you again.
Thanks, Carol.
I hope we can have another chat one day.
Sure we will.
You're listening to the Travel Writers Show on JAIR 87.8 FM.